Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Right now at Last Call, call them the sneaky hot tech stocks. We've got high-flying names that you may be missing. Cashing out. What's really driving a surge in insider stock sales? We have got answers. Is $100 oil right around the corner? Why it may be here sooner than you think. Canceling student debt. President Biden revealing a controversial new plan. But could it add to the cost of college? Plus, tax day nearly here. How can you best preserve your money, your income, your wealth? Real world advice you cannot afford to miss. And it's Make It Mondays. We'll meet the entrepreneur bagging cash on vintage designer purses. All that and more over the hour. So as always, belly up or buckle up. A Monday Last Call is up right now. Good evening here. Good afternoon out west. I'm Brian Sullivan. All that and more coming up in our hour. But first up on Last Call today, Jamie Dimon's warning to the world. The CEO of JP Morgan Chase saying that interest rates could go up, maybe way up. In a letter to shareholders, Dimon writing, quote, huge fiscal spending, the trillions needed each year for the green economy, the remilitarization of the world, and the restructuring of global trade are all inflationary. I'm not sure models could pick this up, end quote. Dimon says his bank is ready for any range of scenarios where interest rates could drop. They could go as low as 2%. They could go as high as 8% or higher. For context, the 10-year Treasury yield is hovering about 4.4%, the highest level in a year. Now, Dimon is talking about the potential for 8%. Now, Dimon is not wrong about the national debt. It has ballooned to more than $34 trillion. Put that into perspective. That's a lot of money. In fact, it's $103,000 for every man, woman, and child in America. Hey, that could almost cover the cost of 1 year of college soon. But I digress because that's a segment later on in the show. And of course, despite soaring debts and deficits, the S&P has continued to do nothing but go up, up, and up. It is completely ignored the debt. But why? And that's kind of where we start things tonight. Let's talk about it with our leadoff panel for the day and the week. Joining us now is 248 Ventures chief strategist and CNBC contributor Lindsay Bell and GLJ Research CEO and longtime Tesla bear, but also has a strong view on rates. That is Gordon Johnson. Gordon, I'll start with you because I know you've been itching to talk about this for a while. Does debt not matter? Because every other industrialized company is pretty much just as in debt as we are?
It absolutely matters. And thanks for having me, Brian. Good to see you. Listen, Jerome Powell is the gaslighter in chief. And let me explain what that means. Janet Yellen couldn't issue $3 trillion in debt this year, nor could Congress continue to spend recklessly without the Federal Reserve printing money to fund it all. Think about this. The Federal Reserve is the only entity that can legally print dollars. Without them printing that money, we couldn't run these massive deficits. Think about this. We are not in a wartime economy. We're in a peacetime economy. We have 5.9% nominal GDP growth. Since 1990, nominal GDP has averaged 4.8%. We're at 5.9. Despite those facts, we're running a fiscal deficit, the likes of which we haven't seen since World War II. We have debt to GDP at 122%. In 2000, it was 58. With Volcker, it was 40. And you have Jerome Powell and co. talking about rate cuts. This is reckless. But it's this recklessness from the Fed, their money printing, that is allowing Janet Yellen to issue the debt, that is allowing Congress to spend recklessly. And all of that translates into inflation for the masses. And real quick, what that means is people can't spin. You have, I'm reading from my notes, you have consumer-facing companies like Costco, Lululemon, Nike, Ultra Beauty, McDonald's, Darden, all recently cautioning on revenues and guidance. They have to do something, and they need to do something fast.
Lindsay, Gordon's right, but I could look at any historical metric and say we're doomed, and yet the stock market, which is really just a collection of men and women and a lot of computers, doesn't seem to care.
Yeah, I mean, this is a lot different scenario than in 2011 when S&P downgraded the U.S. debt. The public was outraged at that point in time. But also at that point in time, we had a lot more patriotism in this country. We were rebuilding from the depths of the financial crisis. There was also a lot more corporate pride, I'd say, as well. We're in a completely different scenario now. And I think Jamie Dimon actually pointed that out in his letter. He talked about having and celebrating the American exceptionalism. He talked about rebuilding trust with the U.S. government. We're lacking that all right now. And I think that's part of what you're seeing in the market, just completely ignoring that. But the other thing I'd say about Jamie Dimon and his interest rate calls is they haven't panned out too well over the years. Back in 2018, he was calling for 5% interest rates, and we topped out at 3%. At that point in time. And it's always been the same thing with him, is the fiscal spending. And hey, I agree with him and I agree with Gordon that the spending is out of control. We do need to get it back into control. We need to eliminate these deficits for the future of our country. But as far as interest rates go, there's a lot more to play than just fiscal spending.
It is a fair point on Mr. Dimon, a very smart guy, by the way. A couple years ago, he and I made a bet on China's GDP. We bet lunch. I was right. He was not. I still have not had the lunch, Gordon. So if anybody at JP Morgan Chase is watching, I am available most afternoons. That said, Gordon, do you expect the stock market to eventually care? Your points are all well taken. But if I look at Japan, by the way, Japan's worse than us, and their stock market's also at a record high. Most of Europe has not quite 100%, but close to it. That's not including countries like Greece, et cetera. And their markets have also soared. So it's not just us. It's like the world doesn't care, at least not right now.
Yeah, so I want to talk about the stock market perspective because everybody focuses on that. A record, this is a record. The 10 wealthiest percent of people own 93% of stocks. That's the highest percentage ever. The wealth inequality gap, for the first time under Jerome Powell, the top 1% of wealth in the United States, that top 1% owns more wealth than the bottom 90%. So the stock market is not the real economy. And the problem, again, as I evidence with those consumer companies highlighting negative earnings in Q1, is when inflation gets too out of control, people just can't spend. And here's the issue with interest rates. A lot of the quantitative easing that was done until we had COVID, it was just QE for stocks and housing. We didn't have the helicopter money dropping fiscally on individuals, which we've now seen. And now inflation is out of control. One other thing, 2000 to 2020, compounded annual growth. Every year, inflation averaged 2%. From 2020 to 2024, inflation is averaging 5.4%. So people just can't afford life. And what that means is you're going to get social unrest. You're going to get declines in spending. And I think it is going to matter. And listen, here's what's going to happen. Just like we saw with Liz Truss when she tried to do all this spending and the bond vigilantes came in, the bond market is going to demand higher yield to compensate for the inevitable inflation that's coming. And as those higher yields in the market, forget about what the Fed does. It's U.S. Treasury yields that set market rates. As those yields go up, I think that, the markets will come down.
So much of the media focuses on like the red team versus the blue team. I think the real battle is, to your point, the haves and the have-nots, because wealth and economy has only, or inequality has only gotten worse the last couple of years with home prices and the stock market. But I digress. Lindsay, leave us with some advice. Let's say our viewers are watching, they're listening on the radio, they're acknowledging, they believe that rates will go up, not come down. What should they be doing? If you think rates are going back to 5 on the 10-year or higher, what should you do?
Well, first of all, I think that we should be vigilant that interest rates aren't going to go from, 4.5% to 6% overnight. It's going to take some time. And if it happens over time because the economy is improving, GDP is increasing, the consumer has been resilient, they are seeing wages, real wages, increase. Higher interest rates can be a good thing that the economy can absorb. Even Jamie Dimon will say the best way to get rid of the deficits that we're dealing with right now is through growth. So growth can be a good thing. And in a growing environment, higher interest rates can be much easier to absorb for individuals, corporations, and the economy.
Lindsay Bell, Gordon Johnson, it's an important conversation. And given that debts and deficits just keep going up, I have a feeling we will have it again. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
All right, let's take a look at what happened to your money today. And maybe everybody was focused on the sun because they stayed out of the stock market. Almost no movement anywhere on a macro level. Let's call it a solar snoozer. But as always, there are stocks that did move. The big winner of the day was Albemarle, up nearly 7%. The lithium miner getting a much-needed pop after what's been a rough run, the big decliner. Once again, Paramount Global, it's not the first time we've said that. Investors hoping they're hoping for a big buyout. Let's get a very quick check on futures after a muted market reaction today. Futures mildly in the green. All right, we are just getting started on this busy Monday. And up next, the overseas chip maker that is turning up the heat on Intel and getting billions from you. Plus, our Sully Stats, it's back, and we deliver some red-hot, sneaky stocks that you may be overlooking. We're going to bring them to you ahead.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation. Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
Let's get to tomorrow's news tonight. And first up, and only up, Tesla settling a closely watched lawsuit. It involves a crash that killed an Apple engineer in 2018 after his Model X swerved off a highway while using its autopilot feature. The case was set to go to trial this week in California. The settlement, while not disclosed, helping Tesla avoid a long jury trial over the role its autopilot tech may have played in the accident. Meantime, there is a multi-billion dollar deal happening in the Arizona desert, and it could be very good news for American semiconductor making and jobs. Christina Partsenevelis joining us now with more. Christina.
Made in America, but with the help of a Taiwanese company. Taiwan Semiconductor is the largest chip manufacturer in the world and is not only getting $6.6 billion in subsidies from the government, but also $5 billion in low-cost government loans to build advanced chips on American soil. TSMC now upping its promise to spend roughly $65 billion on three plants in Arizona. Originally it was two, now it's three, to help the White House move towards its goal of bringing roughly 20% of the world's advanced semiconductor manufacturing to the United States by the end of this decade. So far, two out of those three TSMC plants are expected to make the most advanced chip technology in the world, also known as 2-nanometer. Think of it as just a marketing term, by the end of this decade. The White House, though, does expect 6,000 direct manufacturing jobs, 20,000 construction jobs, and tens of thousands of indirect jobs in this decade. That's according to them, which sounds like great news, and it is, but some promises have already been broken. TSMC pushed back initial production at its first factory to 2025. I visited it there, and they said that local workers, American workers, lacked expertise with advanced equipment, which is why they had to bring in Taiwanese workers. In January, TSMC said the second plant would not not meet its original 2026 schedule. And a senior commerce official told me that they still expect Taiwanese workers to come to the U.S. to work on these plants because it's just so challenging to build and work with advanced equipment. Secretary Gina Raimondo was on CNBC this morning, and she weighed in on those delays.
Obviously, it's you have to assume there'll be some challenges. That being said, these projects are on time. We expect them to be producing at scale 2 and 3 nanometer in the coming years.
And another chip plant by TSMC poses a threat or challenge to Intel, the biggest recipient of CHIPS Act funding. You can see on the bottom right half of your screen. Last week, Intel announcing its manufacturing plant, or as known as its foundry, lost $7 billion in 2023, and they're expecting losses to peak this year. And that's why shares fell roughly 12% last week and continued to fall. You can see almost down 2% today. Investors seem to be focused on the long-time horizon for improving operating margins, which are negative. They only expect to be about 30% by 2030. And, also, of course, the continued delays at Intel's Ohio plant. But Intel, too, plans to build these advanced chips on American soil, which is great for us, and eventually become the second biggest foundry in the world by 2030 after TSMC. But as both compete, TSMC and Intel, in building advanced chips on American soil, it's all going to be about securing customers and following through on promises. And so far, several have been broken, Brian.
Let's hope that these promises and the money are enacted and the jobs are created and we know how to do the jobs, we know how to do the work, because that would be a big deal. Christina Partsenevelis, you're a big deal. We appreciate you coming on. Thank you. All right, get ready for another very snazzy animation. I have nothing to do with these, by the way. Anyway, they're fantastic. It is time for another installment of our new Sully Stats. Some of the stuff that stands out to me in the Last Call team inside the market. And so right now, we dug out 3 red-hot stocks, but they're not NVIDIA, they're not Meta, you know those. These are stocks that may have flown under the radar a lot or a little. The first one is Uber. Now, let's be clear. If you take Uber, you've probably noticed your Uber trips have gotten more pricey. But did you notice that the stock is up 141% in the past year? Or what about Western Digital? They've been riding the AI hype train, doubling in value over the past 12 months. And here's a real surprise. Another under-the-radar winner of the AI frenzy is Eaton. Eaton is a 113-year-old company, ostensibly based in Cleveland, Ohio. It's a classic industrial stock. And Eaton has doubled in the past year because they help build and run critical infrastructure for things like data centers and the electrical grid. So these sneaky hot names have printed investors, maybe you, a lot of money. But what's the story now? And are there any other under-the-radar names that might help you print some money? Let's ask EMG Capital founder and president Eric Jackson. Eric, I don't think you own those. I think you used to own or maybe still own Uber. But what do you make, just, you know, first thing you think of when you see Eaton doubling?
Well, those three names are kind of the poster children for why this rally is a lot broader than a lot of skeptics give it credit for, Brian. I love these stories. And I think what's interesting about all three names you mentioned, and I did own Uber for most of that run-up, I don't own it currently, is that they just get forgotten about, or they, you know, you think, oh, I take Uber, but we're coming out of COVID, things are slow, so how can it, you know, handle to continue to, you know, see the stock price double in a year? No, I don't think anybody was predicting that a year ago, and yet it just happened. So I love going trolling for some of these less heralded names where there's less hype attached to them. And you have a greater chance, if you do your homework, of finding a striking success.
That's kind of fun. That's what we're trying to do with this Sully Stats, is kind of pluck out some things where you go, huh, I did not read. What's that song? Things that make you go, hmm. All right, Eric, what are some, not those three, do you have any other names? Not saying you're calling for a double. Okay, that would be ridiculous. But names that you think are maybe not on the radar as much as they should be.
Well, I think the key with all those names you mentioned and the ones I'm going to mention is, where is the puck going? Are you skating there? I don't care if a stock has done well. I care about where can it, you know, can it continue to do well? Can it continue to grow? people are selling Tesla and Apple because they don't understand the growth story. Where are the growth stories? So two names I like a lot right now, and they fall into the AI space, like Eaton that you mentioned, but they're just lesser known compared to the NVIDIAs and Supermicros out there, are Dell and ARM. So Dell is a similar story to a Supermicro. If you believe that we're just getting started with AI and they're going to continue to have to build out these AI servers. And there was a story about a week ago, Brian, you probably saw with in the information talking about Microsoft and OpenAI teaming up to build a $100 billion AI server farm. That sounds to me like a lot of growth still ahead. So a Supermicro has to be a part of that. And, you know, Dell is not just your grandma's PC hardware manufacturer anymore. They've got a huge business. It's the fastest growing part of their business called ISG, which is basically building these AI servers as well. They just were featured prominently at the recent NVIDIA AI show. And they will be part of that build out. I think they've already doubled in the last year, but they're just starting to get some recognition now. So that's one. Mm-hmm. The other one I like is ARM. ARM was sort of forgotten about, even though it had an IPO less than a year ago, because people thought of it more as a mobile chip company or just a plain old CPU provider. Like, you know, and we saw, you know, the Intel chart from Christina a few minutes ago about how that's been doing. But ARM is tied to NVIDIA also at the hip in the sense that their CPUs power a lot of these GPU AI servers that are continuing to get built out. Why I also like them is that their royalty rates are on the upswing big time. I don't think that's yet appreciated. So even though they had one great quarter recently that everyone's talking about, it's kind of like the way NVIDIA had one great quarter last May. If you sold it then at 400 or 500, you missed out on a further doubling. So I think there's more good news to come with ARM.
We like it. The new name, Michael Dell and his team just keep reinventing. Every time people bet against Michael Dell, he proves them wrong. He's one of the best business, smartest investors in the world, probably in history. Done a great job. And I do love your ARM tied to the hip. That would be a little bit weird, but I do like the image in my head. Probably need to put the elbow in there somewhere. Eric Jackson, EMJ Capital. Eric, thank you. Appreciate it. ARM and Dell. All right. Still ahead. Maybe fill up your gas tank now because your next guest says that $100 oil could be coming, and it could be coming soon.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation. Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.
All right, let's get now to your last call watch list. And tonight, we're watching gold. Because gold prices eclipsing their old record today, locking up their 15th closing high this year. The big move driven in large part by central bank buying and ongoing geopolitical divisions and may soon reach a boiling point. And we say that because of this. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu today said that Israel does plan to invade the Gaza town of Rafah. That would disregard warnings from the White House and the EU and other countries because of the possible further humanitarian catastrophe around any invasion. Now, from an energy perspective, oil prices did hold steady today. They did not move on that news. But they have spiked 20% since the beginning of this year, and some believe the second half of the year could bring even higher oil prices than we have now. Case in point, in an interview with Citadel's head of commodities at a conference in Switzerland today, he said that the markets are going to be, quote, extremely tight, and that OPEC has retaken control of the market. Remember, OPEC and its allies cutting more than 2 million barrels per day from their production and their quotas. All this as the Strategic Petroleum Reserve remains at 40-year lows. Iran is threatening retaliation on Israel, and there is new data that points to the fact that American oil production may actually be going down, not up. The bottom line is that it appears oil could be ready to make another move higher? Could $100 oil be on the horizon? Let's talk about it with Octane, oil and gas strategic advisor, Christine Guerrero, somebody I've interacted with many times on the Twitter and the X. Christine, so good to see you on the, I guess, the little screen or the big screen of last call. Welcome. You posted some really interesting data that you and JP Morgan backed it up. You believe American oil production could be going down. How come?
Yeah, so about a week and a half ago, the U.S. Energy Information Administration, the EIA, revised their U.S. oil production data down to only 12.5 million barrels of oil per day in January versus the 13.3 million barrels of oil per day that they had recorded for December. This downward 760,000 barrel of oil per day production adjustment makes it the lowest U.S. oil volume produced since January of 2023. And it appears to be too much to be explained by weather alone. The only similar revision was recorded in February of 2021 during Winter Storm Uri, when producers were told by ERCOT to turn off their electricity to oilfield equipment, allowing the lines to freeze. No such action occurred in our relatively mild January when compared to February 2021. Now, tomorrow, the EIA will update their short-term energy outlook using that information. I expect to see them adjust their U.S. full-year oil forecast down.
Okay, so Christine, I'll cut you off there. The EIA tomorrow, and you and I and a few of the oil nerds out there, we always love these EIA short-term outlooks. We kind of wait for them. Let's talk about something that could make the other case. Ukraine has been launching drone attacks on Russian oil infrastructure inside of Russia. They're getting more bold. They're going deeper and deeper. I could make the argument that's actually bearish for prices, because if you get a refinery knocked out, that oil can't be utilized, still being pumped, and has to be sold somewhere. How do you view the Ukraine-Russia situation from a price perspective?
I mean, right now, I'm not really putting any numbers around that situation, because Russia has become more or less the go-to supplier for China and for India. I do believe that the infrastructure being impaired in Russia, as well as the fact that they have a limited amount of tankers that they could deploy for their crude, you know, due to sanctions and ability to get insured, you know, on those cargoes, like that alone might keep Russia from scaling up their crude exports.
Yeah, they've got that ghost fleet that we kind of talked about a couple years ago. Christine, you make an excellent point on actual data. Amazing. Supply and demand still may matter in the commodity market. And you and I and a few others are going to watch that short-term outlook tomorrow morning. Christine Guerrero of Octane. We really appreciate it, Christine, and good to have you on the show. Welcome you back anytime.
Thank you.
All right. You're welcome. Take care. All right. Coming up, cancel this. President Biden revealing a new plan to bring student loan relief to millions. But how come almost nobody is talking about the skyrocketing cost of college? Well, don't worry, because we will. Next. That's right. Some bonus TNT for you, because the ratings are in for yesterday's NCAA Women's Basketball Championship. And they are mind-blowing. The matchup between Iowa and South Carolina averaged 18.7 million viewers on ESPN and ABC. Friends, that makes it the most watched basketball game in 5 years of any kind. More than any college, more than any pro game, any title game, whatever, the most in 5 years. And while she couldn't help her team take down undefeated South Carolina, Caitlin Clark was a huge driver of viewership and crowds. Clark has already declared for the WNBA, so the story of her massive impact on the game may just be getting started. And by the way, congrats to the Gamecocks. All right, from high college ratings to high college costs. Today, the president announcing a plan to eliminate debt and interest for millions more student loan borrowers that meet certain qualifications. It may definitely be good news for those borrowers, many of whom may have tens or hundreds of thousands of debt. But one question not being asked enough is, why do people need to borrow so much money? In other words, why is college so expensive at many schools and just continues to go up? This coming year, three Ivy League schools will now cost you, you know, room, board, books, tuition, all in, $90,000 or more per year. And it's not just the Ivies, because we know what their education is worth. New reports say that some newly accepted Vanderbilt engineering students are being notified that the school's all-in price, all-in, is about $98,000 per year. And other schools like USC in California, they can get close or even exceed that when you factor in off-campus housing. Of course, there is financial aid available for many students. But for these so-called full freight kids, ones not eligible for aid, their parents are wealthy but maybe not rich, next year, we're going to probably see a college top $100,000 per year in its list price. But is that even actually a bargain in some cases? Joining us now is the CEO and founder of Application Nation, Sarah Harbison. Sarah, thanks for joining us. All we do is talk about student loan debt. By the way, I just last year paid off 20 years of law school debt of over $100,000. I wish I wouldn't have, but whatever. Anywho, why does college continue to go up? And why doesn't anybody talk about that side rather than just how do we pay for it?
Yeah, these colleges have gotten away with tuition increases for decades now. And the reason for that is, for the most part, higher education really flew under the radar of the news cycle. But over the last couple of years, they are under a microscope, especially related to anything cost-related, admissions, athletics. And so families are finally saying, we've had enough. And these college presidents and boards of trustees, they knew it was coming, but they rode things out as much as they possibly could. As you mentioned, we have those Ivy League institutions, some of them topping over $90,000. And we have to remember, Ivy League institutions don't offer merit scholarships. And yes, they have a great need-based financial aid budget. But what we are hearing is that it's really helping lower-income families. But most families aren't in that bracket. And they're looking at that price tag and they are scared to death. So they're looking at other options.
And I want to be clear.
Are interesting.
I love transparency. I'm on the financial advisory board of my college, Virginia Tech. And I always bring this up because my parents paid $5,000 a year. I know I walked to school barefoot and with a donkey cart, but yeah, I get that. It was a while ago, but you get my point. I always bring this up, right? You're a state school land grant institution. Now that a lot of that has to do with cuts in state and federal aid. But let me ask you a more difficult question, all right, because my producer and I agree on this. If Harvard tomorrow said we're going to charge $200,000 a year, they more than double the sticker price, do you think they would have any significant drop-off in applications? I don't.
I think those Ivies are always going to be attractive to a certain group of families, but I am really seeing families take a hard look at those prices. It used to be they were looking at those private, highly selective non-Ivies like Vanderbilt, but as you said, the price tag is huge. And yes, a school like Vanderbilt offers merit scholarships, but only the top 1% of the applicant pool at Vanderbilt is going to be able to take advantage of those merit scholarships. So those public large universities are a huge threat to the Ivies and all those highly selective private colleges with huge price tags. Some of these public universities are freezing tuition. Purdue University has frozen tuition for 13 years straight. And those large public universities are highly attractive, not only for in-state applicants, out-of-state applicants, they're still going to be saving money, merit scholarships, honors programs. And as you mentioned, with women's college basketball, you can see the two teams that made it to the final game. Those large public universities are a huge draw for students who want winning athletic teams, including women's basketball, especially. Oh,
and by the way, my friend's kid could have gone anywhere I think he wanted. He's in Georgia. He went to Georgia in-state. I think if it's not free, it's almost free. And by the way, we'll let you go, Sarah. There is a school named Purdue that is playing in a basketball game tonight. So good luck
to
them.
Right.
And, by the way, them and the Huskies. Sarah, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Kind of walk that line on viewers. We like you both. All right, let's get now to our quicker than the ticker. All the best of the rest of the headlines.
Let's put 60 seconds on the clock. Italy's Mount Etna spewing rare volcanic vortex rings over the weekend. They're natural, near perfect circles of gas emitted under specific conditions. Locals call Etna the Lady of the Rings because of them. 27-year-old Russ Cook just ran the length of Africa for charity. The British runner ran nearly 10,000 miles over 352 days. He raised nearly $1 million for homeless youth. The world's most valuable comic book, the Action Comics number one, featuring the first ever appearance of Superman, just sold for $6 million, published in 1938. Beyoncé's Cowboy Carter, debuting at number one on the Billboard 200. It is the highest selling album of the year so far. Beyoncé also the first black woman to debut at number one on the country chart. An AI chatbot integrated into Spotify. Users can type in prompts and generate a music playlist based off the text. Spotify says the tool is still in beta mode and to, quote, prompt responsibly. All right, coming up on Last Call, tax day right around the corner, and a top financial planner is here with three essential tips for you.
All right, welcome back, and listen up, investors. This could be something worth paying attention to. Big company insiders are selling a lot of their stock. In fact, insider sales hitting a three-year high in the first quarter. Robert Frank with some of the names and reasons behind some of the biggest sales. Robert, what's going on?
Well, Brian, insider selling in the first quarter reaching the highest level in over 3 years. Total insider sales, that includes pre-scheduled trades, nearing $25 billion in the first 3 months. That's according to Smart Insider. The selling is more than double the same quarter last year. And most of the sales, not surprisingly, were in tech. Jeff Bezos accounted for about a third of all that, unloading 8.5 billion of Amazon shares just on February. Unclear exactly what he plans to spend the money on. Amazon CEO Andy Jassy cashing in $21 million worth of shares. That's equal to what he sold in the previous 2 years combined. Mark Zuckerberg sold Meta shares for the first time since 2021. He cashed in $135 million worth in the first quarter. That followed nearly $500 million in sales at the end of 2023. Now, in the past, he sold stock to fund his philanthropy. That's probably what he did here. Peter Thiel also selling for the first time in 3 years. He sold $175 million worth of Palantir. And then, of course, Snowflake's Frank Slootman cashed in $69 million just weeks before he announced his departure. NVIDIA directors sold $300 million worth of shares in the quarter. Now, Brian, as you know, insider sales don't necessarily mean a top for stocks, but studies do show these insiders have pretty good timing, at least around the short-term peaks.
A lot of this, a lot of this, I got to assume, has to do with what I'm going to talk about next, and that is the T word, that is taxes. I say taxes and Robert disappears. That's it. That's what people think about taxes. He's literally just cut the cord. Robert Frank, if you're safe, let us know. Speaking of wealth and taxes, tax day is just a week away, and your next guest has a few real-world tips on how you can preserve some of that wealth by taking advantage of the legal tax code. Sam Petrucci is here. He is Managing Director of Neuberger Berman Private Wealth, the Head of Advice, Planning, and Fiduciary Services at said firm. If you hear from Robert Frank, Sam, let us know. I want to make sure that he's safe out there. Three real-world advice, okay? One has to do with charity and whether or not you use stock or cash. What do we do?
That's right. Well, first off, thank you very much for having me. It's great to be here, Brian. The number one tax planning mistake that we see is we have people that are giving cash to charity, yet they're paying capital gains taxes. And so instead, they ought to be giving highly appreciated stock positions to charity to fund their charitable giving endeavors. That will provide them with an income tax deduction, but importantly, it will allow them to escape capital gains taxes on the donated amounts. So think about positions in Apple, Amazon, Google, for example. Those are prime candidates to be giving to charity to fund those charitable giving endeavors.
Yeah, don't sell them, make cash, and then give the cash. Because almost all major charities now do accept equities as a gift.
Absolutely.
Right? So, and they sell them very quickly, but let them deal with that. You deal with the transfer. Okay, this one's interesting. Focus on asset location. I'm assuming you don't mean the sock drawer.
That's right. So look, the rich spend a lot of time in coming up with an asset allocation, portfolio construction. but they're also quite savvy whenever it comes to asset location. And what I mean by that is they're quite smart about utilizing their IRAs to own things like private debt or high yield corporate bonds. Really anything that throws off a lot of ordinary income or short-term capital gains, which is subject to a top 37% taxable rate. So, for example, you would rather own your passive index funds in your taxable account versus one of those other asset classes. The exception to the rule might be if you're able to identify that next NVIDIA as an example, and it goes to the moon. Even though that is subject to long-term capital gain rates, that would be an example of something that you would also want to own inside of your IRA.
Nice. Not just what you own, it's where you own it. And then my kids will probably never get this. Just they're watching. I want them to know. But the lifetime exemption on gifts to children and family members. This is for those that are wealthier probably than you and I both, but this matters to them.
That's right. So under current law, each individual may transfer a total of $13.61 million or a total of 27 per married couple, to their heirs, tax-free. However, at the end of 2025, current laws will expire, and that amount will be cut in half. And so the rich right now are funding trusts for their children, and sometimes even for their spouses, so that everything that they've gifted plus the appreciation will be removed from their estate for estate tax purposes. Remember, the next dollar that is transferred is subject to a 40% federal estate or a gift tax rate.
40%.
That's right. And so some of the more popular strategies that are being utilized are so-called SLATs, that's short for Spousal Lifetime Access Trust, where you can indirectly gain access to the gifted property, and also so-called Dynasty Trust, set up in a jurisdiction like Delaware, which aims to benefit not only your children and grandchildren, but other successive generations as well.
I hope someday to have that problem. Sam Petrucci of Neuberger Berman, some very good real-world advice. Next time I get you on, got to talk about the SALT deduction cap and what a big deal this is.
But happy to, Brian.
That's for the next time. We'll see you again, Sam. Have a great night.
Thank you.
All right, coming up, it is Make It Mondays. And just wait till you see how much there is in flipping designer handbags. Stick around. Let's get to today's RBI. And while the solar eclipse was amazing, something to marvel at on the ground, I hope you got to check it out. There was a lucky few who were able to take it in from the sky. Delta Airlines offered special eclipse flights where passengers would be in the air during the eclipse, or the totality if you were in the right zone. They offered a flight from Dallas-Fort Worth to Detroit and from Austin to Detroit. Basically, they followed the path of the eclipse. We thought this was a cool idea, but then we wondered, what if you sat on the wrong side of the plane? Well, Delta, they had your back. They took care of it. In fact, the Delta pilots, and a big shout out to them or Delta, whoever did this, look at the flight path. They actually looped around. They went in a circle so that both sides of the plane got an unbelievable view of the eclipse. You know what? That's doing them a solid, a rarity in airlines these days. Good job, Delta. All right. It is time for our Make It Mondays, our series spotlighting entrepreneurs across America. And tonight, we meet Nico Yusei, the founder of Fashionica. She turned her passion for thrifting into a full-time online vintage purse flipping business. Look at this.
This one is $4.29. And then I'll show you guys this guy. When my business started making six figures, that's when I was like, oh, okay. Maybe we should rethink this and see if I should pursue this full time. I'm Nika Yusei. I am a small business owner and I cater to vintage designer. I came from a single parent household. And so I've pretty much grown up like thrifting, finding great deals, shopping secondhand. I love vintage bags in general. I feel like they have more character. They're really unique. You won't see them too often on the street. So I was telling my fiance, oh my gosh, like I love finding secondhand bags. I can't buy all of them because financially, I wouldn't be able to afford rent. So he kind of gave me this idea like, oh, well, why don't you like start buying them and then selling it and then just make like a little bit of money so that you can keep it going. Everything has always been very curated based on like my style, like my love for fashion. Every bag that I pick out, every single one. If I don't love it, I'm not gonna sell it. I think it was really when I entered TikTok that it kind of blew up. I had one video that went viral, and thankfully it was about like my small business, really like showing like the business side of like selling designer bags, and it ended up getting 2.8 million views. So she is a beautiful, like burnt orange, like very vibrant, almost like neon like orange. This did not come overnight. You know, you put in a lot of like hours, and you put in so much, you make so many sacrifices. I'm just so proud of like how much this has grown. I would love to get to a place where in like 5 years, I can say I have a whole team helping me out. I have a warehouse. I have an actual brand that's outside of my house. So that is the end goal for sure.
And Nika Yusei joins us now out of California. Nika, not a lot of time. Is there a holy grail of bags? Like if there's one you could find, just be like, this is it.
Oh my God, yes. Hi, hello, by the way.
Hi.
I would say that the Hermes Kelly Pochette is my absolute favorite bag that I have in my collection, and it's a very difficult bag to source.
I would imagine it's an easy bag to sell.
It is. It very much so is.
What is it about vintage bags that makes them so hot and so rare?
I think the fact that when you step out in public, you don't typically see those anymore. So it's the ones that are really unique that catch people's attention, and those are my favorite to source.
Are the new bags or the designers smart enough to know this will one day be vintage, and so they're kind of limiting the way they roll out the newest ones?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, a lot of designer brands are doing the limited edition bags. Thankfully, I love just watching the fashion shows, so I have a good pulse on what is going to be on trend, but yeah, I would say for sure.
Well, if you start flipping fanny packs, let us know here, because that's more our style. Nika Yusei, Fashion Nika, thank you. Great stuff. Congrats on your success. Folks, we'll see you tomorrow. Last call. We're off. Shark Tank is next.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation.
Cannonball!
Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.